So, you were born at a period, obviously, where we're on the edge of some of the biggest changes in agriculture. We're just going to start. Well, actually, they were starting during the war, weren't they?
Yeah.
So could you tell us a bit about your family and your family's life, going back to, you know, your earliest childhood years, where you farmed and what you did?
Well, my father, when he left school at 13, he got a job at Ford Hall at Chapel Henry Frith as head horseman, 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And he was there quite a few years, because Ford Hall and then it was quite an estate. He was reared with two of his uncles and an auntie. Before he left school, he said at hay time, he had to go out, get some horses, rig them up, and he had to mow an acre of grass before he went to school in the morning at hay time. So he was well prepared for dealing with horses, and he went to Ford Hall and he was head horseman, because there weren't another horseman. And there was some hired labour, I think one was called David Slack, and a chap called Joe Wardle, who finished up at Orchard Farm at Flash.
Right.
As well as his horseman duties, he got, you know, help out on the estate and that. And he could recollect, it was middle of June, going up on the top of Calvin Tunnel, between Edale and Chapel Henry Frith, near the big chimney where the smoke comes out from the tunnel, catching sheep, what they'd missed at shearing time, and he said, foals, big holes in the ground, he said they'd still have snow in them. That was middle of June.
Good grief.
Then he met my mother, she was a cook in Chapel Henry Frith at the doctor's. She came out of Chesley Street in County Durham. That's perhaps where I've got my funny accent from. And they got married. They went down into Northamptonshire, he got a shepherd's job. Took my mother down there, my eldest sister, she was born down there. Mm. And then when they came back up here, they had two lads, me and my brother.
So, obviously the work of a shepherd, I mean, this is another world now, isn't it? The idea of your entire life is wrapped around taking care of a flock of sheep.
Yes.
What did that work involve?
Well, he got to tend them, lamb them, and of course in them days everything were outside. And they grew a lot of turnips, so they folded them through winter.
Right.
And a little pen round for them, eat them off, then move them on to another bit. And my dad always reckoned winters, when it were east wind blowing, it was damn sight colder in Northamptonshire than it were in Derbyshire. Because right. They were not stop it.
No. So you'd, what he would do and what other shepherds would do, all their job would be about using what was available on the land, you'd keep moving them off onto other bits of pasture.
And this farm grew a lot of turnips, some for sheep and that, and they grew a big lot for some jam company, these turnips.
Mm-hmm. They
went in for bulking jam up.
That's right, the strawberry jam, I remember that they used turnips to bulk it up during and after the war. Well, they didn't have to say what was in it then, did they?
Yeah,
amazing.
Then my grandfather, he got the grazing rights on the catchment area for Fernley Reservoir. But in them days, very few sheep, and he wanted some help. So my dad moved back up, and he lived at Norman Wood Farm at Taxall. And when he moved back up, they hadn't many sheep, and he got a job as a rabbit catcher through winter months. And he was a rabbit catcher all through winter months in Goyt Valley and all up round Erwood with a gamekeeper from up there, a chap called Tom Bell, who lived at Tunnel Farm. And he caught rabbits all through winter.
Snared them.
If it froze hard, they ferreted them. And his best tally, he said, one night snaring were 480 rabbits.
Wow. So they were snaring rabbits partly because they were a challenge, like in terms of the amount of grazing and damage that
they were a big pest, and there was a source of income.
So you got your farm. What was on the farm?
In them days, I think you'd only an odd cow, and everything was just geared around sheep.
So the cow was just for your own use, was it?
Yeah.
It was your own sort of to make yourself sufficient.
Yeah.
And how many sheep did you have at the top number?
My granddad used to say, A wise man never asks and a fool never knows. So don't ask me that
question. It's a question not to ask.
Norman Wood Farm was owned by who?
The old farms in the area then were owned by Stockport Corporation. They bought the valley that made Fernley Reservoir, they bought all the farms below the dam as well, so we could have a say-so as to what happened, or how far, where they wanted where they wanted to put the pipelines.
So how long were your parents and you still farming on there?
We were at Norman Wood till I was 9 years old, and my granddaddy retired from Oldfield and went across living in Fernley Village.
So we're about 1950 now?
Born in 1943.
Early to mid-50s.
Yeah. And we moved, it's only about a quarter of a mile, so we moved over there.
And had your granddad all that time been farming?
Nope. He started off, his first job, he worked in Gunpowder Mill down in Gore. Yeah. He worked there. He did a spell as a policeman in Manchester. That's where he met me granny Brockler. She come from Wisbeach. She were out in service in Manchester. My granddad met up with her there. Then he packed that up and come back to Fernley or Tom Farm. And they were like a farm bailiff at a farm just outside Buxton. Then when the opportunity came to get this farm at Oldfield and this big area of land for running sheep on, he took it.
What sort of land area did you have for grazing? Was it a big area?
I think it was about 5,300 acres, something like
huge area. So how many other people were running sheep? You know, were you joining up with people? But there must have been
nobody else on at the start,
right? Because that's the most.
As the years went on, like, one of my uncles, he came in with my granddad as well, and the one or two people around top boundaries, they ran a few sheep on.
So how many people were working over this huge acre?
There'd probably be four to five men.
And it's real hard work, I guess.
It was all walking. If you started, you know, rounding your sheep up at Cat and Fiddle, you walked up there first.
How far was that then, to walk?
4 miles more. Right. 4 or 5 miles
more. And you'd be out on the hill, I guess, all day long, Was this a good way to spend your childhood and youth, would you say?
It was all anew. It was all anew.
And you can remember that as a teenager, can you, going out with your dad all the time?
When I left school at 15, my dad bought me a good working dog and a pair of horse-eyed boots built on a full-sprung last, if you know what them are. When the toes turn up on them.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he bought them from a firm at Rothbury, a firm called Rogerson's, and they specialised in making hill boots for gamekeepers and hill shepherds. And they were made out of horsehide.
Wow.
And a pair would last me 2 years.
Fully waterproof, I bet.
I can't even remember when they'd have Wellingtons. That were always with water. Boots. Boots. And he said, get a saw and go down it and cut yourself a stick. So I was a shepherd then, pound a week, in my keep. There were no thought of going getting a job or doing anything else. The labour was needed at all. My brother was already working on the farm.
So is your brother older?
5 years.
5 years older.
And when we buried him, one of my lads said he'd never seen such a big coffin.
Really?
He was a bit overweight, my brother.
Oh, right. So how many of you were working on the farm then? And what did you have once you got the farm?
There was my sister, who's still living. She lives up Mac Forest. She's 80. She's full of knowledge from Gordon Valley still.
Oh, really?
And there were my sister, my brother and me.
Right.
And my sister got married and went just as I were leaving school.
So we're on your farm now then, and into your 20s. Did you, you still working for your dad?
Still working for my dad.
And that, was that okay? Because this is the...
Yes, yes, it was alright. All through summer, it was sheep, that's all we knew.
Was that hay making?
We didn't make a lot of hay.
No.
Didn't make a lot of
it. Then, you
bought
it then, did you, for your sheep?
No, they made a bit, but, you know, sheep won't take on, and there were food for them for hay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He made a bit of hay for, in case of emergencies. And I said, all through summer then, 12th of August, that were always a big thing to look forward to, for the grouse shooting. We always went beating, and you met up with people as you'd not seen for 12 months or so on. It was always a great get-together, that were.
So would you carry on beating through the grouse shooting season?
Yeah, we'd go sometimes a couple of days a week, sometimes a couple of days a fortnight. But we helped keep us out because they did us a lot of good if they saw anything up with sheep at top end, like, you know, they'd...
Let you know,
put it right, yeah.
Do you like sheep?
Yes, I've been in sheep all my life. When I was showing Grixton's, about 1988, won the male and female champion at Royal Show with Grixton's. I won champion Grixton at Royal Welsh Show for 3 years.
What years are these, when you were winning these prizes?
What would they be in? Early 90s, late 80s, early 90s. Now I've got a big carrier bag full of rosettes from my dad. He showed sheep all his life. Wherever Royal Show were in them days, because it moved round, him and a few other farmers in the area, they'd troop off and be there for a week. And
what sheep did your dad
keep? Oh, Derbyshire Grixton.
Derbyshire Grixton,
yes.
Always.
Well. Yeah, always.
What's special about them, Bill? What's particular about them?
They're a lovely sheep.
Mm.
They're very versatile. Hardy, got a good lamb carcass and a good fleece.
Mm.
Most of Grixton wool went for hosiery.
Oh, really? As good as that?
Yeah.
Right. Because that was the next thing to say about it. Of course, the wonderful value of sheep. Half of it's pretty much lost now, isn't it? The wool.
Wool's worth nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. So you'll remember all that then. The careful shearing
when they were still going to school, I used to go out shoulder my dad just showing wool. And Todmorden and Show up in Lancashire, my dad always went there showing. And I think we were unbeaten for donkey's years in wool class.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you sheared those fleeces yourself?
No, we always showed it on
the
hoof. It was still on the fleece. Then in latter years we started showing fleeces because they did away with on hoof fleece classes. So we had to take actual fleeces and some very nice trophies, what they won from them. And when we were younger, when Paytons and Bowens took all as well at home Firth, I think they still, you can buy knitting wool maybe then. Of course then everything got swallowed up with British Wool Marketing Board.
Mm.
But every time wool went in, my dad always loaded us lads up and we went up and saw it graded. And had a big hot dinner off them.
Great.
And it was very eye-opening.
Mm.
So we kept selecting as rounds, not only for, you know, your meat quality, but for your wool quality, because in them days your fleece was quite a worthwhile project.
So, I mean, everything you're saying is tremendous pride in what you were doing.
Oh, yeah.
You knew
yeah.
that what you were doing was immensely valuable to several industries, really.
Yeah.
To feed people and clothe them. I mean, what could be more valuable than that, in a way? So you were on the farm, so what was your thinking about that? Were you thinking, I'll stay here and take over from Dad, or how did you feel about it?
Didn't go through your mind in them days. You didn't think about them like that.
So what did you do? You stayed on the farm till...
Well, stayed on the farm, then my dad retired and he pulled out a big sheep run, and by that time we'd lost about half of it. Forestry Commission came in 64. And started planting.
Right, how much of the acreage that you...
They took 2,500 acres at Forestry Commission.
So half? half of the territory that you was open moorland became planted up. What did you think about that at the time?
Well, work. Got extra work with it.
What, fencing work?
Fencing, rabbit shooting, fire watching, fence walking. Yeah, you know, it appealed to us like that.
Glad of the work. Yeah. Your dad retired when?
Dad retired in the 80s. He died in 84. He worked up to when he retired. Then he had a heart attack and that slowed him down and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started diversifying.
What did you do then? You changed things quite a lot, did you?
Rented some livery horses. I rented some ground round and I started running my own pheasant and grouse shoot. Grew a few Christmas trees. I've done some forestry contracting. So, you know.
And you carried on enjoying it, being up there?
You had enough money to survive, but only survive. And kids were growing up.
So how many children?
Three
children. Have they stayed in this area or?
My daughter's just outside Cardigan. Mm-hmm. She spent a fair number of years at Mahuntley. The lad at Peak Forest, the youngest. He went straight from school to Blue Circle, cement works. He's been there ever since, mechanicking. Mm-hmm. And the other lad, he's at Market Wheaton up in East Yorkshire.
Right. But coming back to you and your farm, so you're doing a bit of forestry work and working with the sheep.
Forestry and part-time gamekeeping and...
Anything you could get your hands on.
And enjoyed it, you know. Yeah.
But you ended up working for the National Park.
Yeah.
What made you make that shift?
I started with National Park in 1999. Yeah, I did 13 years on roaches. We packed up, sold up from farming in 96. I just wanted, you know, I thought, wouldn't it be nice if we had a wage paid every week instead of having to go out there?
Did you own the farm by this point? Or
yes.
You don't have bought the farm?
We bought a farm.
When did that happen?
68.
All right, so you have been owners for quite some time.
Yeah.
Your dad had bought it, had he?
Yes.
He was still working the farm then.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So, you know, things were going downhill and farming, well, it still is one of the few industries that take the produce to market and take what they're given.
Mm.
You have a factory, you tell the person who's buying it how much it's going to cost him. Mm. Farming, you go to market and the other end give you what they won't give you. And it was no good.
Was it getting harder and harder to make it make
ends meet? Oh, yes.
Is it rising costs?
Not just all the costs were going up. Everything you touched went up.
At what point did you start buying in, you know, machinery? And I mean, not that you didn't need.
You didn't buy much machinery.
No, not for your kind of farming.
No,
you wouldn't do. So, what's the basic tools of the farmer?
Your basics were your tractor, perhaps a loader. We always had a mowing machine, and you'd have a trailer, but you just didn't have a lot of machinery. The money wasn't there to buy a lot of machinery and you didn't need it. You know, same as silage and such like, there were plenty of people contracting out.
Yeah. So you were the ranger for the roaches?
I was the warden.
The warden, sorry.
The warden, yeah.
What did that involve?
Keeping your public on the straight and narrow,
right.
Predator control, fencing, dry stone walling, path repairs, path drainage. You name it.
Do you think that anyone could have done that job who'd come not from a farming background? Do you think it would have been a very different person doing a job in a different way?
No, not unless he'd been doing it, come from another moor or something. Getting your dry stone walling skills, your heather burning skills, and your predator control skills together, they're not all there in everybody.
And they don't tend to be there if you've got a degree in environmental science.
They wouldn't stoop so low.
No, well, your experience has made you perfect for the job.
Yeah, no certificates for anything. Never been university anything.
Did you enjoy it?
You're
not doing it now, are you?
No. I've been retired 2 years.
2 years, right.
That's what I can say what I want.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you find it a difficult transition to go from farming to...
No.
Same skills, same... Well, it's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you're a perfect man for the job, really, weren't you?
Yeah.
Tell us what you used to see. Can you give us a little list of all the things that were around? And
well, like I said, it was mainly like your curlews, golden plover, they were everywhere. Your ring oozles, everywhere they were.
Are there any now?
No, man, very, very rare. I don't think there's so many ring oozles stay. When I were on roaches, when I started, we used to monitor them, the one or two nest sites, and you have roaches perhaps in teens, and stop off in spring and feeding as they were going farther north. By the time I finished out roaches, that didn't happen anymore. And when I started on roaches, there were a few wheat ears still, and part of my job was predator control. After about 3 or 4 years, got rid of all the storks and weasels and crows and stuff, there's wheat ears everywhere. Wheat ears everywhere. Mm. You know, the grand little bird. Mm. What there is now, I've no idea.
What about stone chats? Do you get those?
Stone chats came back. Wind chats back.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Reed bunting, you get plenty of them?
Not many. I never saw them on the road. But we get reed bunting on Monica's bird tables here. Mm.
So these are all the birds that are in such terrible trouble. Yeah. Do you get snipe up?
There was snipe on top of goldfinch moss. You'd see odd ones on roaches. Curlews, they'd about gone off roaches, but they did come back once I got me burning regime in place. And then these here model aeroplane men insisted on flying the model aeroplanes, and curlews went.
Oh, no.